This is ESPN Radio.
Make the necessary preparations. You better lay the groundwork now, because if you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. It is Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty were presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Chris, it is Thanksgiving Eve. It is the day before the big day. In your mind, the Super Bowl of holidays.
No question about it. And Gojo, I was just listening to our intro, and I feel like I took a shot at the Lions, and I don't know that I necessarily should have done that, because the Detroit Lions, say what you will about a winless team all the way up until week 12, they pretty much fight every single week. We probably should be making that claim for the Chicago Bears that have lost five straight, but I digress. The game plan that I laid out for Thanksgiving is still solid, and that most folks should be trying to adhere to that, because that's a winning formula. If you're looking for a path to success on Thanksgiving Day, I gave it to you in the show yesterday, and I'm going to give it to you again today.
I promise you, if they handed out Super Bowl rings for their performances at Thanksgiving, Chris Canty would be doubling up on this. It would not just be the football standpoint. So I promise you, you will not be led astray by Chris Canty. That's why we'll want to hear from you. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fan deserve. And Chris, we'll take a look at a lot of things today here. We're going to look at that Chicago Bears situation and what's going on as we head into Thanksgiving's game for them. A lot of weird rumors swirling around a program that's been swirling around the drain for a while now this season. We've also got what we saw last night in the college football playoff committee, because we had another round of rankings come out and we had history made, Chris. The Cincinnati Bearcats finally did it. They become the highest-ranked Group of Five team again, and this time it's for being in that top four. Georgia at number one. Ohio State jumps up over Alabama at number two after their dominant win against Michigan State. And then the Cincinnati Bearcats show up at four. Chris, was there anything that shocked you here? Because I felt like for the first time in this college football playoff ranking cycle, I kind of looked at it and said, yeah, no, they got all this right.
Yeah, that was the big surprise for me when I was watching the rankings reaction show with you, Jason Fitz, and Christine Williamson. Like, you didn't have any beef with what the committee did, and that was probably a little bit surprising to see that you didn't take issue with it. But I guess it's the expectation that we had coming off of the weekend that was college football. When you saw the upset with Oregon, we knew there was going to be a shakeup at the top, and that was going to provide an avenue for Cincinnati to bogart their way into the top four. And the fact that they've had back-to-back dominant wins over South Florida and SMU, I guess that just gave them enough credibility for the committee to vault them into that spot. But the one thing I will say in just looking at the rankings, I mean, you've got three Big 12 teams and you've got three SEC teams, and it feels like that Oklahoma State team that's looming right there at number seven is poised. If they take care of their business against Oklahoma and then maybe run it back against that same opponent in the conference championship game, that they could potentially vault themselves into the top four in the final CFP ranking. So if you're Cincinnati, you got to take care of your business in the conference championship game against Houston. That's one part of it. But you would like for Oklahoma State and or Alabama to potentially stub their toe in order to make sure they provide a clear path for you, because let's face it, one of those Big Ten teams is going to be in, whether it's Ohio State or Michigan, whoever wins the game this coming weekend. That team, if they take care of their business in the conference championship game, they're going to be in the college football playoff. Georgia's going to be in the college football playoff. So if you're Cincinnati, you're kind of rooting against Alabama and you're rooting against Oklahoma State the rest of the way.
No doubt. I think the three teams in front of them all clearly control their own destiny. Cincinnati's got one hand in the wheel in that department, and they're certainly going to need some help. You mentioned we'll get an answer about Michigan right behind them at five coming up this weekend. And then there's Notre Dame sitting there at six. Here was the CFP committee chairman, Gary Barta, last night in the college football ranking show, talking about Notre Dame entering that top six category.
Well, Notre Dame's been building momentum all year. They play terrific defense. Their offense has a lot of weapons, a lot of experience there. In the last few weeks, they beat Georgia Tech handily. Georgia Tech didn't look very good. They played Navy. They played some teams that maybe haven't helped their strength of schedule. but a terrific team. Notre Dame is highly thought of by the committee.
And Chris, that's all well and good, and I appreciate Gary Barta saying that. I can tell you from the Notre Dame delegation, we did not expect to be here. We are excited to be involved in the conversation. I walk into this for one of the first times, Chris, with no expectations, because you mentioned what lies ahead here. Notre Dame is going to play a very bad Stanford team this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame will likely win the way they've won in the last couple of weeks here, blowing out their opponent the way you would expect to see one of the top 10 teams in the country treat teams that are well outside of that range. If Oklahoma State's able to beat Oklahoma, they are going to jump Notre Dame next week. We won't even have to wait till the conference championship weekend, and that will make the picture abundantly clear. And that's the beauty to me of this year's version of the CFP, Chris, is so much of this has a chance to be directly handled on the field. And I feel like as much as we can have that, as often as we can have that taken out of the committee's hands in the what-if game, it is generally a good thing for this sport and the way it operates.
No, you're absolutely right. You want it to be handled on the field, right? You don't want it to be subjective when you have the results that you have when the teams play head-to-head. I mean, that's binary. Like, you can throw the statistics out of the window. We can measure this thing in wins and losses and determine who are the four teams that are most worthy based on their resume to have a shot to compete for the national title. So I'm with you 1,000% on that one. But just getting back to your alma mater, Notre Dame, this wasn't supposed to be a year where Notre Dame was going to be a juggernaut and be in the college football playoff and win a national championship. I think you kind of admitted that early on when you saw the way that they were playing and the inconsistency at the quarterback spot. Like, you were one that was saying, you know what, if we can make this situation respectable, then we'll count that as a win. I don't think you even expected a couple of months ago that Notre Dame would find themselves in this position on the eve of the end of the regular season. And so the fact that Brian Kelly has been able to will this team to be in a double-digit win squad, and Notre Dame as a program being in the midst of the most consecutive double-digit win seasons, that's attributed to how good of a football coach he is. So I want to put some respect on Brian Kelly's name, even though Notre Dame is most likely going to be on the outside looking in when it comes to the college football playoff.
Chris, I'm glad you decided to put some respect on their name, because one of our coworkers didn't feel like doing that this morning here. I was driving around minding my own business, listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, and Keyshawn Johnson decided to, and I say Keyshawn Johnson, very proud University of Southern California alum, decided to drop this on here when he was asked about the prospect of Notre Dame winding up in the CFP again.
I don't want to see no damn Notre Dame. I don't want to see that. I know what that's going to be. And yes, I went to USC. And yes, I don't like Notre Dame. But if I went to no college, I don't want to see the damn Irish, period. They do nothing for me. Nothing at all.
Got a national following, though, Key. They really do.
They do nothing. They're not a good football team. I don't want to see that again, another blowout.
Okay.
Why would you want that on your screen?
Candy and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Candy. We'll talk to Heather Dinich, our ESPN senior writer, coming up soon. But, Chris, what you heard there, I mean, you're not surprised, right?
Man, if you got hate in your heart, let it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Keyshawn is doing right now as an SC alum. There's that hatred for Notre Dame. So that's his position, naturally. That's his perspective, and I get it. But so we're clear on one thing, Gojo. Whoever steps in at that number four spot in the college football playoff, it's going to be an ugly showing when they get on the field with Georgia. Like,
oh,
it's not going to be good, whether
yes.
It ends up being Cincinnati, whether it ends up being Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. It don't matter who it is. That Georgia team is on a whole nother level. Like, it's them and then everybody else in terms of the best teams in college football. Now, could we be surprised when it comes to the championship rounds? Yeah, we could, but it ain't going to come from that number four slotted team, whoever that ends up being.
And Chris, that's been the story basically every year of the college football playoff, right? We're lucky if we have two great teams, let alone three, but we've never had four. It's almost always been a first round full of blowouts in this spot. And Notre Dame has been one of those teams where it's happened to them twice. It happened in 2018. It happened last year to them. And what's happened here is what you're hearing from Keyshawn, in unique to just SC fans, he's right about that. I hear this from plenty of people. We don't want to see Notre Dame get in there and go get blown out. Why doesn't Notre Dame join a conference? Why doesn't anyone do this or that? Notre Dame has success on their own terms, and they are consistent. And that's what bothers a lot of people. Because no one likes consistency in college football. I mean, hell, we had good consistency from Clemson and Alabama For years, they have been the preeminent matchup of the college football playoff era. And even after a while, we started asking, are they bad for the sport? We do that all the time because people hate consistency, and Notre Dame has been consistently very good. They haven't been great like those top three teams, but they've been consistently better than most everyone else's team. And I know deep down in places they don't want to talk about at parties, that bothers them. So coming up in about 30 seconds here, we will go away from the people trying to hot take their way through this, and we will get some answers from the woman that wants to sit outside the college football playoff committee's door every week and get us the most accurate information possible. We will do that after this word from Wendy's. Now, a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with fresh cracked egg and cheese on a buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru, go during breakfast hours, duh, and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese for just $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's.
Breaking news in ESPN Radio Sports Center. The College Football Playoff Committee releasing its latest top 25, and it's not about who's number one, it's about who's number four, as the Cincinnati Bearcats is now fourth.
Caney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Caney. We head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN senior writer Heather Dinich, who joins us, giving us the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And Heather, why don't we start there? Heard Mark Robbins say that in the update. The Cincinnati Bearcats finally cracked the top four after all of the worry and the wailing for the first couple of rounds of rankings here. As you look at this team's outlook going forward, how much of their own destiny do they control the rest of the way?
Well, they control it to a certain extent. They have to win. Everybody knows that, right? And they might not. They might lose to Houston in the American Athletic Conference Championship game. But assuming they go undefeated, they still have to be concerned about the possibility of a one-loss Oklahoma State winning the Big 12 and surpassing them at the end. Is it absolutely going to happen? I don't know. Is it a possibility? 100%. I mean, we have seen in the very first year of the college football playoff, TCU went from number three to number six in what probably is one of the most jaw-dropping things that we've seen in the CFP era. But it would be the ultimate gut punch. I mean, they like Cincinnati right now. They were impressed by them on both sides of the ball in the win against SMU. The win against Notre Dame looks better and better every week. CFP committee chair Gary Barta said that last night. So Cincinnati's in a great spot right now. It's just not a lock.
Heather, the other shakeup that we saw in the top four was Ohio State jumping Alabama for that number two spot. It feels like the Crimson Tide is a little bit vulnerable. So I wanted to ask you, assuming that the Tide took care of their business in the Iron Bowl, and I know that's a big assumption, if they were to get in the SEC championship game and play Georgia close in a loss, could we still be talking about Alabama possibly hanging on to one of those final CFP ranking spots? Or is a two-loss non-conference team a non-starter for the committee?
I wouldn't rule it out because we don't know what's happened yet in the other Power 5 conference championship games or with Cincinnati. Again, think about, so you have that scenario that you just laid out. Couple that with a Cincinnati team that loses, right? And then Oklahoma maybe winning the Big 12. The committee likes Oklahoma, but clearly they've struggled to win games convincingly this year. What if you have a two-loss Big 10 champion? So there are a lot of other pieces to the puzzle we don't know yet. That's why I wouldn't rule it out entirely. But by Alabama dropping from number two to number three, I think it shows that there are some more questions around that team. And look, Nick Saban was the first to point it out after the Arkansas game. Defensively, they allowed Arkansas 10 of 19 combined on third and fourth downs. They gave up too many yards. They made mistakes offensively as well, as good as they were. And I'm telling you, they were good offensively, right? That was a good win against the top 25 Arkansas team. But at the same time, there are questions. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I do think we learn a little bit more about Alabama each week by the committee.
Kenny Angola Jr. talking to Heather Dinich on the Goodyear hotline. And Heather, no one believes me when I talk about Notre Dame stuff, so I want to ask you these questions because you're the credible one here. Looking at Notre Dame situated at sixth right now, a lot of conversation goes to conference championship weekend, that 13th data point that Notre Dame will not have as an independent team here. Based on the way this situation is playing out right now, does this do anything for or against the argument of Notre Dame joining a conference based on what we've seen this year?
I have talked to athletic director Jack Swerbeck about this repeatedly. He's probably tired of me asking him this question, especially last year as they saw the benefits of being a member of the ACC. And nothing has changed in their minds as far as that goes. They love their independence, and they feel like they don't need it. And I heard you before you guys went to the break talking about how people love to hate Notre Dame and the consistency of it. In my mind, Brian Kelly is one of the most underrated coaches out there because that's all he's done. He has won consistently, and he gets hammered because they haven't won that national title. And I get it. I understand that there's a difference between what Brian Kelly is doing and what Nick Saban has done, right? It's a difference in winning the national title and doing it repeatedly. But at the same time, the consistency of 10-win seasons and being the winningest coach in school history, my God, people, the man wins football games every year. So they don't need that. But as far as the college football playoff goes, they're going to meet on December 1st about expansion. And if you go to a 12-team playoff, what do they need to join a conference for? They're going to be in every year.
Heather, switching gears a little bit, we saw the news yesterday, James Franklin locking into a long-term contract with Penn State with an unbelievable buyout. Mel Tucker seems like he's poised to lock in on a long-term situation with Michigan State. I'm looking at these vacancies around college football with these high-profile programs, Florida of recent, to go along with LSU and USC. Are these jobs not as appealing to some of these other coaches that are more established around just because of the strings that come attached with them? What's going on in terms of the actual coaching search with those three major programs, which seem like they would be attractive jobs?
And they are attractive jobs. I think it depends on who you ask. And by the way, can I please get James Franklin's agent and Mel Tucker's agent?
Yeah.
I got three kids that got to go to school, man, you know? But I think that when you look at those jobs, they're all high profile. You can win at those schools. You can recruit at those schools. All of the resources are there. Gazillions of dollars poured into those athletic programs to help you win football games. You know, I talked to Florida athletic director Scott Strickland earlier this week about what they're looking for, and he pointed out the last three coaches that we had who had short tenures, he said, all had pinnacles of success at some point at Florida, right? You can do it. So what they're looking for is somebody who could come in as an elite recruiter and hang with the likes of Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and Jimbo Fisher for those top recruits and then connect with them. Dan Mullen wasn't able to connect with them. That's not a reflection on the job at Florida. That's a great job with plenty of resources, right? But you got to get the right guy in there to connect with the players, recruit the elite athletes, and to win consistently and take them to national championships. That's what's been missing there. And then, I mean, that can be said at LSU. That can be said at USC. They're not devout, like, they're not missing talent. It's there. It's all around them. You just have to get coaches that can bring it in.
Coaches that can bring it in, and then certainly we know there are very clear yardsticks, especially inside that Southeastern Conference, named Alabama and now named Georgia, that make life very hard on people trying to go out and accomplish relative to a different standard here. But we got a lot of time to keep track of all of that. We've got a couple of weeks left of the College Football Playoff Committee, which means we get plenty more opportunities to talk to Heather Dinich. Heather, thank you for giving us some time today. Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks, guys.
Heather Dinich, ESPN senior writer, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. And Chris, it's so funny about those jobs and hearing what she talked about there right after we had the Brian Kelly Notre Dame conversation is It's really about how you frame your expectations, right? Because people that look at Notre Dame from the outside and get mad they're not winning national championships don't see it like I do. Like, I grew up in the Bob Davey, Ty Willingham era where we weren't winning a lot of games and we were getting embarrassed. I look at it now and say, yeah, we might not be winning national titles. That also might be a lot harder given the current landscape than it is. And so relative to where we are, reframing expectations to say, huh, we're going to win double-digit games every year, beat the vast majority of teams in college football, and then maybe lose in the final four big-time dance up there? I can live with that, and I'm sure a lot of other fan bases are going to have a harder time talking themselves into that, especially in certain conferences.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, Gojo. I think consistency leads to ultimately having success at the highest levels of the sport. And with these programs like Florida, like LSU, like SC, it seems like they're constantly in a state of flux because whatever coach that they decide they're going to land on doesn't live up to the expectations that are put on them from the fan base and from the administration. And so that's my biggest thing when we start talking about whether or not these jobs are attractive, because you have these coaches that are already established at these big programs but not elite programs deciding that they're going to lock in where they're at as opposed to dabble in the waters that are LSU, Florida, and USC. And there's got to be a reason for that. Like, I know you mentioned with SC, there's some strings that come with that job in dealing with some of the board of trustees and the alumni, people overreaching in terms of the influence over the program. The same probably could be said for LSU. I mean, you're talking about Ed O winning a championship a couple of years ago and now being ousted. And then Dan Mullen was in the SEC championship game a year ago. So I'm just starting to try to connect the dots and try to figure out why exactly are coaches that could be potential primary candidates for these jobs deciding that they're going to pass on those opportunities and stay where they're at. I think there's a shakeup when it comes to, you know, the coaching dynamics in college football and these coaches deciding that they don't want to deal with programs that have unrealistic expectations from year to year.
And that is really the conversation about college football that we can and should be having and will very soon here on Canty and Golic Jr. Coming up next, though, we will take a look at what we have got, the meal, not on your table tomorrow, but on your TV screens, and ask the question of why Aaron Rodgers is putting feet pictures on the internet. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Get you in that Thanksgiving mood heading into the big day tomorrow. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Chris, Thanksgiving doesn't have many anthems. This is officially one of them.
Yeah, I'm glad that was remixed a couple of years ago, man, because everybody rides with that at some point. Every household plays that leading into Thanksgiving, especially when everybody's in the kitchen cooking, getting the food ready. Like that is somewhere in the background looming because everybody is looking forward to the actual feast that is the Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah, you need a hype track to get ready for all this. It's just like any pregame. You certainly don't want to peak too early as you're getting ready for the day. You're warming up for the bird here. Chris, I always say when it comes to eating throughout the day, you got to do just enough to stoke the fire, but you don't want to put too many logs in here and burn this thing bright too early. You can't eat nothing, but you don't want to eat too much.
Yeah, see, we have a little bit of a different game plan because I don't eat anything, but I'm hydrating the entire time. I'm pounding the water just to make sure I'm getting ready.
Water.
No food in the morning. There is no breakfast because we kick this thing off around 1:30, 2 o'clock, somewhere in there. Like I said, halftime of the Detroit Lions game. So I don't want to have anything that could fill up my stomach to the point where I don't feel like I'm ready to dominate, especially when it comes to that first plate. Make no mistake about it, Gojo, because you said it, like, this is the pregame anthem for it. Like, this is man versus food. Like, this is a fight. Like, and there is going to be a clear winner and a clear loser. What we're trying to do is give the listening audience some jewels so that you come out on the winning side of this thing. You don't want to end up like the New York Giants.
Oh, God, no. Man, locked in the room and let the bird win could not be me on Thanksgiving, Chris. Could not and will not be me. So we will continue to arm you with knowledge so you can go out here and beat the bird, beat all the sides when it comes to your Thanksgiving table. But right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Aaron Rodgers is tweeting feet pictures. I want to stop
is,
and just...
Is Rex Ryan liking all of them?
I cannot confirm or deny here. We could effort to get him on the Goodyear hotline at some point. Hey, look, you know what? It's out there. All right? We all know. The reason I said this, though, is this is actually not a joke. Aaron Rodgers, in the Zoom press conference for the Green Bay Packers, took out his injured toe and announced, "I have a fractured toe," showing it to everybody on the Zoom call here. Now, according to our ESPN Packers reporter, Rob Domofsky, Rodgers apparently fractured his toe during his quarantine, doing his own workouts. He didn't realize it was a fracture until he got an X-ray upon his return on Saturday. He will, quote, look at all the options during the bye week to decide what would be best to get to the finish line. The one thing he made abundantly clear, though, Chris, is that if one of those options involves him missing time, it is off the table for him right now. So Aaron Rodgers, despite, you know, wanting to be on the field, not enough to go and get the vaccine, wants to be on it enough to put off surgery on the toe.
Yeah, that's the part of it that just rubs me the wrong way a little bit. But, I mean, listen, this is a reality. This is something that he's going to have to deal with. But I don't see this as something that's going to get better with a week of rest. Like the bye week, once he gets to that, it's not all of a sudden going to get better over the course of, you know, 7 to 10 days. This is going to be something that he has to manage and deal with throughout the course of the season. And you wonder whether or not he has to alter his style of play in order to get through and to be available for his team. Like, are we going to see less second reaction plays from Aaron Rodgers, less of him scrambling to extend the downs or to try to pick up first downs? I'm wondering whether or not he fundamentally changes how he goes about his business just to make sure that he's healthy and available for his team, because we've seen the difference between what this Packers offense looks like with him at the helm versus Jordan Love. And it's no shade to the young guy, but A-Rod is just at a different level. You are talking about the reigning MVP. For all of the things that he's done to make it about him and how we don't like necessarily how he frames things, the guy is a hell of a football player, and that was on full display against the Minnesota Vikings. Even with the fractured toe, he threw for 385, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions.
Yeah, that's what gets lost in all this, right? And Chris, we knew we'd get to this point eventually where all of the, you know, upset feelings would subside with Aaron Rodgers once he got back onto the football field, because that part of this is undeniable. And the style of play thing, I think, is a really huge part of this conversation, because, again, we've talked about, we're still waiting for David Bakhtiari to come back to this team up front on his offensive line. Elgton Jenkins, their most versatile piece, torn ACL, out for the year. And so he's going to have to weather this stretch. I saw some reports saying that Bakhtiari in December could be something that they're targeting, but you still got to get to that point in the next couple of weeks, Chris, and doing that on an injured toe certainly ups the degree of difficulty for Aaron.
No question about it. And then this next upcoming opponent that you got before the bye week, the LA Rams, who just got embarrassed by the 49ers before their bye week. Like, this is a team that's going to be looking to get some get back and to try to pay it forward to somebody. And it feels like this is a spot where Green Bay might be a little bit vulnerable. And that's the last thing you can do if you're Green Bay, is afford to drop a spot and potentially put yourself behind the eight ball when it comes to trying to get a hold of that number one seed in the NFC. So, again, this is not ideal if you're the Packers. It feels like the hits just keep on coming. But, you know, this is when we're going to find out what this team is made of throughout this course of the next stretch of games. The next month or so is going to tell the tale when it comes to the Packers' path to competing for a championship and the road they're going to have to go once they get in the playoffs.
Yep, for a lot of the NFC especially, it seems to be among the top teams, the Cardinals, the Packers, the Cowboys, who is going to get healthiest at the right time. We'll keep an eye on that. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But coming up next, we will look back at a team in New York that has struggled. And I have to delineate the green one from the blue one here because they both kind of stink right now. Coming up next, though, as we look at the New York Giants, is this still a place that on its best day can be a destination? One of our best analysts says yes. The other definitively says no. We'll ring the bell next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Breaking news here. Jason Garrett has been relieved of his duties. Tessa in New Jersey.
No, I can't stand that bum, Jason Garrett. I'm very happy about that. However, we have too many decent, good weapons to be this terrible. We are bum, dirty trash, hot garbage. I'm sick of it. Fire Dave Gettleman. He don't deserve respect like that. I don't care if he's old. Fire him.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can get in touch with us here at Canty and Golic Jr. on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, especially if you're going to bring that heat like Tessa from New Jersey. Good Lord.
Yeah, Tessa got some things off her chest with that one. But listen, I can't blame Tessa for feeling the way she feels about the New York Giants, because she's not wrong in how she described them. I mean, the New York Giants right now are garbage juice. Like that sticky liquid stuff on the bottom of trash cans that nobody wants to deal with, wants to smell, but yet nobody wants to actually try to get rid of it because it's so disgusting. That's where the New York Football Giants are, and that's how bad this rebuild has gone, Gojo.
It has been. It's been an outright disaster, and as off-putting as the term garbage juice is to me to hear and think about, it is spot on in describing this situation. And now it's interesting because that stench that you just described – that can stick on you for a while and really change the way that people look at you here, according to some. Now, I want to hear this right now, and I don't believe I have this on my board right now. So, guys, if you have the Marcus Spears sound with you in there that we can play here, our ESPN NFL analyst who joined First Take earlier today and talked about what the Giants are and can still be, if they are a destination for players around the National Football League as presently constructed.
Are the New York Giants a destination franchise?
Yes. Yes, they are. Listen, don't let what's been happening to the Giants fool you into believing that that's not a great place to play. I have one of my best friends who I played college football with, Corey Webster, was a star cornerback for the New York Giants when they were making their run. He's still eating off winning a Super Bowl in New York. Do we not see what Michael Strahan is doing after his career? You don't think that the New York Giants have anything to do with that? You don't see Eli on this screen. We talking about Eli going to the Hall of Fame. Eli had a tremendous amount of success. Odell Beckham Jr. still is the man with the catch because it was in New York and it became larger than life. Yes, it's a destination place.
So, Chris, Marcus saying it is a destination place, clearly not something you agree with.
Man, listen, I love Marcus, but when he makes quotes or takes like that, it reminds me that he used to get hit in the head an awful lot for a living. Like, that's what is going along the lines of. The people that he's mentioning, like the Michael Strahans of the world, Corey Webster, man, them dudes ain't played for the team in over a decade. What are we talking about? The Giants are awful. Like, the Giants are approaching that early 2010s Cleveland Browns territory. We're about to start talking about MetLife Stadium being Factory of Sadness Part 2. That's how far gone the New York Giants are. They're working on their fifth consecutive double-digit loss season in seven of the last eight. Gojo, the last time the team won a damn playoff game, I was playing for them. That's how long ago it was. The last time they were in the playoffs, 2016, and we all know how that ended with the infamous boat trip. But needless to say, when it comes to a cultural standpoint and a talent standpoint, this organization is one of the dregs of the NFL right now. And I think that ownership has to get to a place where they have a level of awareness because they're still living on those 2010, those Super Bowl teams from the late 2000s and what happened in 2011. That they're still resting on that stuff. Meanwhile, the rest of the NFL is passing them by. And so in order for the Giants to get to a place where they're going to be consistently competitive, they've got to make sure that they have people that are in charge of making the decisions that know what the hell they're doing. And clearly Dave Gettleman isn't that person. And right now, I got to say, I don't necessarily believe in Joe Judge either. So they're in a tough spot, but they're clearly not a destination. Like, if you're one of these quarterbacks that's looking to leave, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or even Deshaun Watson, why would you come to the New York Football Giants? Why? You want to trust that organization with the prime of your career? What I'm saying is this. Those players are intent on improving and enhancing their legacies to be considered amongst the best at the position to ever do it. The New York Giants right now, the state of the franchise, the roster that they have, the leadership that they have, it's clearly not the place to do it. So while I will admit New York is one of the best places to win because I won a Super Bowl there, I know what it feels like to have a parade of 3 million people, I also acknowledge where the franchise is at. And it's a far cry from where they were back in 2011. It just is.
Chris, hearing the words Marcus used to describe the Giants, hearing the way you just described the Giants here, it became crystal clear to me. The New York Giants are the NFL equivalent of what's going on with the University of Southern California in college football. You have got programs that we remember being far better than they currently are, and the leadership along the way has failed the current regimes here. You have not had coaches that people buy into to represent that brand and to make people want to buy in presently. Based on what we have seen in the past for both of these spots, they are living on an image that is outdated, and both of them are going to need a major overhaul. And I think you're right, Chris. It starts with the decision makers around it, but the head coach certainly going to be an important part. And much like Southern Cal decided Clay Helton wasn't that guy, I have a feeling very soon the New York Giants are going to realize that their current coach, Joe Judge, is also just not that guy that's going to be the one to get this turned around here. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Want to remind you, we've also got college basketball going on right now. I'm watching the Maui Jim Invitational here in studio on TV. The championship is going to start tonight. Coverage begins at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. And while it is in Vegas, they do have fun flower-laid themed paint areas that are going to make that a real nice fit. Coming up next, though, we will take you to the meal, not on your plate, but on the field tomorrow for Thanksgiving football, next on ESPN Radio.